is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Quick, what's the original name of Music Hall? It's Music Hall and Exposition Center. How about the Cincinnati Zoo? It's the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden. In everyday conversation, we often use shorthand versions of official names, but in the process, we lose contact with the full mission and history of the organizations. Ever since it was founded in 1873, the official name has been Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden. Although Fiona and her friends may grab the headlines, the zoo takes its botanical role very seriously and will be hosting a major one-day symposium on August 30th. We are joined today by the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturalist, Scott Berline. If you would like to join our conversation, please call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. Scott, welcome back to Cincinnati Edition. Good to have you here.
Yeah.
You know, everybody takes notice in the spring when the tulips bloom.
Yeah.
Of the horticulture part of the zoo. But that's one part. You're there every day.
Yeah.
How would you sort of describe the full program of what you're doing?
Wow. Big question. We do a lot. You know, the tunes and blooms and the tulips in April, that's kind of the icing on the cake. That's sort of the crowd pleaser. But there's so much more that follows that. Just take, for example, when the tulips are finished, we go back in with annuals. Okay, everybody loves the color and everything, but the full story behind that is we're trialing those annuals for different breeding companies, growers, and others, to find out which plants grow well here. And they're all labeled, and we put that information in reports and on our website. So the focus there really is to show local gardeners in the green industry what they can, how they can achieve success with plants here in Cincinnati.
So plant trials literally are going on all the time, and
trials.
You're testing.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of different places. I mean, it's botanical garden singular, but you have a lot of individual gardens within the zoo.
Right. Yeah, people used to come and ask, where is the botanical garden? And no, you're looking at it. It's all of it, all of the zoo, all 75 acres. Yeah, there's different individual gardens. There's a pollinator garden to show good plants for pollinators, for butterflies. There's a couple of different rain gardens to show how those work, food garden and many others. And then there's the exhibits, which are meant to sort of mimic the natural habitat of the animals that are there. You know, almost every plant that we grow there is being trialed. The plants that are sent to us by the breeding companies for annuals, perennials, shrubs, and trees, those all get used and reported on. And then a lot of times what we buy in for different projects and things are also being purchased with the idea of, hey, let's try this out and see if it works really well.
So the question always is, does it work here in
exactly.
this climate with yeah. our cycles and,
yeah.
and all of that kind of thing?
Take, for instance, a red maple. You know, there's numbers of different selections out there. Maybe you could go to the nurseries and find 20 different varieties easy. But the native range of a red maple is all the way from Florida up into Canada. So not every selection – you know, that may be selected because it has great fall color, necessarily does really well in our relatively high alkaline soils and heavy clay. So that information on which ones do well in this region is really useful.
And do you then report that back to local growers? And
right.
are there certain companies that really pay attention to what you're learning in your trials?
We hope they're paying attention. We're doing a lot of work, and that's the intent. We work with we're members of the Cincinnati Flower Growers Association, mostly annuals growers and retailers. We work with them and report every year our reports and what. In fact, they're coming to have a meeting at the zoo in September, so they all come and walk around with us and evaluate the annuals in ground. We work with the Ohio Nursery and Landscape Association and work with all those people and cultivate American Hort people and a number of different trials groups and things. And we really try to get the word out there.
Why do you think the founders of the zoo back in the 1870s named it and set out from the beginning to have the zoo and botanical garden? Have you been able to sort of get inside their heads through the documents?
I think so. It's pretty cool stuff. And I have to correct you a little bit. It started as the Cincinnati Zoological Gardens. And it was only in 87 that we actually changed to
1987, yeah, officially.
In 1987, right. The Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden. But one of the Erkenbrecker and others of those original founders were all interested in horticulture. And they enlisted Adolf Strauch, who designed Spring Grove.
I wondered if there was a connection.
There was, yeah. So Adolf Strauch had a great influence, not only on the other Cincinnati parks, some of which are our neighbors, but also on how the zoo looks. And his quote, and I won't get it right, but his early quote from 1873, I think, was that the zoological gardens might function to enlighten and inspire gardeners to improve the public taste or something, like, right, you know, how they used to speak. And, you know, that's exactly what we're doing now. And, you know, he was suggesting that you try stuff and have it, you know.
And he was in that period that he was working on Spring Grove. From the very beginning, he was transforming it into an arboretum.
Right.
And it is an incredible arboretum today.
One of the best in the country, a right, true local gem.
You know, what we had an email that came in from Casey who asked a question. Are there garden features for every season, including winter?
Oh, good question. Yeah, we definitely work to include all season interest. Of course, it's harder in the winter. But there are many plants that really shine in the wintertime. Hollies, which have unfortunately gotten more difficult to find and grow. But we have some nice hollies at the zoo. Spring Grove has a lot of good ones. They're slow growers, and I think nurseries have just gotten away from, you know.
People want something that
comes
produces.
Up. Yeah, it's number one question. Everybody asks you, I need a tree that grows fast, you know, and that isn't a holly. But the deciduous hollies that we have a lot of at the zoo are just spectacular in the wintertime. And of course, you know, a lot of the evergreens, plants with really nice bark, really come to their own in the wintertime.
Which sometimes people don't pay attention to the bark as much as they do.
But they should.
They should.
Especially,
okay,
especially when you're buying from something for your garden, because you're going to look at that bark all year round. Leaves come and go. Flowers definitely come and go. They don't last very long. So the bark on some of these trees is absolutely spectacular.
So how many people work on your staff to on the horticulture side,
right,
of the zoo?
We have 12 full-time staff.
Okay.
And in the spring, well, in the growing season, we'll probably add another 8 to 10 seasonal employees. Plus, we have, you know, our secret weapon is our volunteers, which we have somewhere between 50 and 100. I've lost track. But they come, and mostly retirees, and boy, do they do great work and really, really help us do a lot of what we do.
Well, you know, on the animal side of the zoo, Cincinnati Zoo is really famous for being able to encourage certain rare animals to reproduce, et cetera, et cetera. Does that same initiative come over onto the botanical side?
Well, it does, actually. Not so much the horticulture department and the botanical garden work that we do, but the crew people who do so much with the animals also cryogenically preserve plant material and especially seeds. So a lot of endangered plants are in their seed banks. They periodically regrow them and get more seed. And we grow a lot of plants that, in some cases, have gone back into the wild.
Now, so one of the things, though, is that there's a reappreciation for native plants.
Yes.
And not getting off on some track with exotics that could have all kinds of implications in a different environment.
Right.
How does that impact you? Because Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden, on the zoo side, exotic animals are exactly the point.
Yes.
So what's how about that balance?
It's an interesting, difference. And we do a lot with native plants. We have a very active, influential native plant program, and we have native plant sales out at our Eco Ohio farm in Warren County regularly. But when it comes to our gardens at the zoo, and especially when trying to do, exhibits that look, somewhat authentic, we wind up using a good mix, probably about a 50-50 mix of natives versus exotics. And honestly, that's kind of important to do. Our urban landscapes, which is where most horticulture gets done, are really challenging. And a lot of the native plants are difficult to use in urban settings. So having exotics allows you to put more diversity into the landscape, which creates a lot of advantages, both from interest and design, but also for plant health.
Mm. So there is really a role for both natives and exotics.
There really is. And we try to get that information out there too, because there's a lot of argument and a lot of opinion, but we're showing, plants in real urban settings growing, what they're doing, whether they're invasive or not, whether they're good for native pollinators or not, and so on.
One of the things about the zoo in general, but I also think about the botanical program, as I understand it, is that you're not just focused on the confines of Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden there in North Avondale or wherever. You're also going out into the community. And one of the programs, I know you've taken some leadership in the past on the Taking Root campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Just talk about that campaign a little bit. And maybe there's other things that in the same spirit of that initiative.
Well, I'll tell you a conversation I had with my boss's boss, Mark Fisher, whom you probably know.
I know very well, yes.
So I sort of got promoted into a new role and a new title, which is Botanical Garden Manager of Outreach. Or manager of Botanical Garden Outreach. And, I met with him briefly, and one thing I asked him is, at that point I was getting involved with Taking Root pretty heavily. And I asked him, is that a challenge? Is that a problem with me devoting time to that? And he said, absolutely not. In fact, I encourage you to do as much as you can. And
what is Taking Root?
Taking Root is the tree planting initiative. We began it in 2013, and the goal is to plant as many trees in the Cincinnati region as we can. We set a number of 2 million by 2020. Not sure where we fall on that because the registrations has always been a challenge, but we have gotten a lot of plants in the ground.
You mean people actually informing you if they've planted a tree?
Yes.
In the spirit of that program,
yeah.
and whatever.
Exactly.
And are you constantly making recommendations about what kind of trees?
Yes, we have always are informing groups on different things. Now, what people want to do a lot of times is say, what are the 10 best trees for this? And there's, sometimes when that's appropriate, but mostly we are encouraging people to have a much broader list because that increases diversity. So if you're telling everybody in 1930, grow elms, ash, and so forth, you're doing a disservice. So with that in mind now, we're trying to create a larger list. Let me tell you, too, about getting out in the community a little bit, because just last week we did the Reds Community Fund project at New Prospect Baptist Church in Roselawn. And that, again, is another Mark Fisher, gung-ho, let's do it type of thing.
Is Mark Fisher not gung-ho about anything? I haven't run across
He's not gung-ho about not being gung-ho.
Okay.
Yeah. So, we've been doing that since 2013. So we've been to Avondale, Millvale, Lower Price Hill, and other locations doing these projects, which is such a delight. It's a real treat. It's my favorite day of work every year where, you go in and There's Procter & Gamble groups, Kroger groups, GE this year, and all these volunteers. And we get to play a leadership role. You know, we're going to plant these trees. We show them how to do it right, bring in the right materials, bring in the right trees, and so forth. Inside the buildings and so forth, other groups are doing other things. But just wonderful projects that just really make a difference and really feel good to be a part of.
You know, one of the things that Mark Fisher leads is this whole initiative at the zoo on environmental consciousness and action, all the way from the solar panels and over the parking lot to the drainage system under the Africa exhibit to all sorts of things.
Yeah.
What's the role of the botanical side of the organization in that effort?
Well, you know, more and more is becoming apparent. First of all, just on a plain ecological field, the more plants, the more gardens, the better. The less pavement, you know, and so forth that you've got, the better off the environment is because of all those things, you know, the water mitigation, stormwater mitigation, air quality, water quality, carbon sequestration, all of it. But more and more, and where we're aiming at more and more, is the human health aspect of plants and gardens, particularly in an urban situation. Mm. So there's been so many studies now on what access to plants or looking out on gardens means for hospital patients, for instance. You know, it means quicker recovery, fewer pain meds, less complications. There's a study from Chicago last 2 years ago, I guess now, where they found that 10 trees on a city block versus a city block of similar residents without the trees made a difference in how people reported the quality of their life. It made a difference of them reporting being 7 years younger. So the quote, you know, they're feeling better and younger, and that they had an income level of people $10,000 higher than them.
Wow.
So if that's just 10 trees, think what, you know, trees plus flowers plus shrubs plus good design means in any city or suburb.
You know, we had a question that relates to the home gardener, and that is the classic grow zone maps that people see, are they still accurate? Are they still applicable?
They are more so in some parts of the country than for us. We've always been a zone six. Mm-hmm. About 5 years ago, the USDA created a new zone list. So they tried to adjust for the weather patterns and the change in the climate that they had been seeing. And a lot of the lines got moved further south. We stayed in zone six. But, you know, on the East Coast or the West Coast where they have a maritime climate moderated by weather or by the oceans, those maps tend to be dead on. But we're set at an average low every year of minus 10. Well, you know, we fall all over the board on that. So that's the average minus low. But, you know, we've had winters where we never got below zero. We've had winters where we've hit minus 23. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it being a what they call a continental climate here, kind of sort of you got to take those zone maps with a grain of salt.
Well, a grain of salt, but also they can be directive. They can be
absolutely
influential.
They're
but
a great guide. And, you know, if you are planting something that you absolutely don't want to lose in a winter, go with zone five plants. If it's something you want to take a chance on, go with zone six or even zone seven plants.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there is all of that. You were mentioning before that you the zoo botanical garden has a farm out. Is it Warren County?
Warren County.
Okay,
yeah.
Warren County. Do you grow food for the animals? And if you do, is that your department? Are you farmers too?
Yeah. Well, yeah, we are growing more and more food out there, and our apartment has a role to play. We have one part-time person out there. No, I guess he's full-time now. Two people out there, more or less, to do the work out there, which includes some of the browse that we grow. There's also a farmer with equipment and everything who can do things like bale hay and move that. But we've we've grown a number of different specific plants like mulberries and sumacs and things that certain animals really, really like or need. So we're growing more and more of that out there, and it's really kind of just getting started. I mean, we've been doing it for a little while, but just sort of getting our feet under us and learning, you know, how to go about doing it.
Well, I want to very much thank Scott Berline from the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden for being with us today.
It's been great fun. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this is a great conversation. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.